This is WWE superstar Drew McIntyre, and you're listening to the WWE Podcast.
One that everybody wants, me.
Becky Lynch is going to WrestleMania.
Claymore!
Oh! Austin 316 says I just whipped your ass.
This is my iron.
You're going to acknowledge me.
What's going on, everybody? Guys and girls, welcome back to another edition of the SmackDown Review right here on the WWE Podcast. As always, I am one of the hosts of this show, Michael Ritter. You can find me on X at Michael5Ritter or Instagram at MichaelRitter5, and also one of the hosts of the Football Function podcast, available on all of your podcasting platforms, including the one that you're listening to this show on, and also available on Patreon if you prefer an ad-free listening experience. I am here today to talk about the SmackDown that aired on March 15th, 2024 from Memphis, Tennessee. Location breakdown brought to us per usual by DJ Kuzmo. It does feel good to be back, I will say. Obviously, I was gone last week. I was actually in Dallas, Texas, attending SmackDown that was covered by Grim Reefer. So I wanted to give a quick shout out to Grim Reefer for doing his thing, obviously, coming in the clutch and stepping up and helping me out, honestly. I mean, I'm sure that Matt would have been more than willing to either, you know, record the SmackDown review himself or push it off a little bit and just not have a SmackDown review this week. I didn't want that to be the case, so I reached out to someone who I felt like would have been more than willing and more than capable of providing a very good, thorough SmackDown review. And, you know, obviously Grim Reefer, he's been around here for the WWE podcast for a pretty long time. Contributor on the Mailbag. And obviously contributor on the Football Function podcast. Grim Reefer actually has his own show, his own weekly show that's called Reefer's Rivalries on the Football Function podcast. So he's doing his own thing. And if you like what he did on the SmackDown review, then you will definitely like what he does on a weekly basis over on the Football Function podcast. So I just want to give a quick plug for our boy Grim Reefer. Thank you so much for helping out here on the WWE podcast last week. But speaking of last week, man, that was an experience. Now, obviously, in terms of the actual SmackDown itself, if I were just at home covering it and just breaking it down like I normally do, I probably wouldn't have been like, ooh, this was a SmackDown for the ages. You know, this is one that really hit the ball out of the park. So it's not like the show itself, just on an even playing field, was extremely memorable or anything like that. But I will say, being there in person, obviously, getting to take a six-year-old who's never been to a wrestling show ever to his first ever event, that was pretty special. And obviously, got to see a lot of his favorites. It would have been nice to see LA Knight come out. That was probably, him and Rey Mysterio were probably the only two that were on this episode of SmackDown that weren't on last week's that he really would have liked to see. But it was actually pretty interesting. Just really quick side story here. We didn't tell him at all. Where I live is about a five-hour drive from Dallas, there and back, 5 hours each way. So he had to go on a long road trip. We pretty much told him we were going shopping, right? Like, we're going to Dallas. He's been to Dallas several times, so that's nothing new. But this particular time, we just told him we were going shopping. Nothing really planned. We were going to kind of just play it by ear and let the events kind of take place. Well, he knew it was Friday, because that's the thing. We drove up there that morning, so we got there a few hours before the show. We were able to like hit up a mall, hit up a Target, things like that, before we actually went to the arena. And we ended up running into traffic. That's a whole other story for another day. We almost, you know, ended up cutting it pretty close, making it there on time. And I'll get into that once we kind of unfold this here. But nonetheless, he knows that it's Friday, right? Like, he knows that SmackDown is tonight. So we're at the hotel, and he literally asks me, hey, can we watch SmackDown? And I was like, oh, but he has no idea that it's in Dallas. He knows we're in Dallas, but he doesn't know where SmackDown takes place every single week. So that was our saving grace right there. And I was like, we'll pause it, right? We'll have it recorded. We're going to go run some errands, and then we'll come back to the hotel room, and then we'll watch SmackDown. And he was thrilled just do that. He was like, oh, awesome. You know, I can't wait. So we get him dressed. We all, you know, throw on our wrestling shirts. He really doesn't think that's anything too crazy, because we wear wrestling shirts all the time, so that's nothing out of the ordinary. But we're driving to the American Airlines Center and we're starting to get closer and closer. And then we eventually run into probably a 30 minute just bumper to bumper. You're moving up an inch. There's only one lane open. Cars are trying to pass you and then put their blinker on to try to get in front of you way later. Like, that's one of the more annoying things. Just another side note, whenever you're in traffic and you know that two lanes are forming down to one lane and you're already in the lane that they're forming into, and you just keep seeing cars pass by, trying, like, them not knowing, hey, that lane ends up there, or they do know and they're just trying to be an a-hole and jump in front of you. Either way, that's kind of what was going on whenever we were on our way to the arena. So it started to kind of put a little bit of doubt, like, man, are we going to get there in time? The last thing I want, you know, to do is be late to this episode of SmackDown, because I had a feeling that it was going to start and end strong just because of the things that were advertised. But as we're sitting there in traffic, kind of just waiting to go in, he's starting to see more and more people walk by with wrestling shirts. He's like, hey, that guy's wearing a Jey Uso shirt. That guy's wearing a Bloodline shirt. That guy's wearing a Stone Cold Steve Austin shirt. We're trying to downplay it, right? Like, we're trying to say, oh, you know, that's pretty cool. Just, you know, must be more wrestling fans in the area or something like that. He doesn't put it together yet. We finally find a parking spot. He thinks we're going to Walmart or Target or somewhere. And we start walking up to the arena. Now he's just seeing, you know, championship belts. He's seeing nothing but wrestling fans. And then he just looks up and he says, maybe WWE is here. Like, he's still really innocent in this whole thing. Like, he's still just not assuming, hey, we're going to a WWE show. He just thinks that maybe WWE is here, but he's starting to kind of put the pieces together. And obviously we got, like, video footage of him finally, you know, putting it all together whenever we're getting up there, getting into the tickets. And he says that, you know, hey, we're here at SmackDown. This is my first ever event. This is so awesome. It was a fun little experience getting a chance to see him walk into the arena and go lay eyes on an actual WWE ring, the stage, surrounded by wrestling fans. It was a crazy experience. Like, I'm sure any of you who are listening right now and you've gone to wrestling shows, I'm sure you remember your very first one. And depending how old you were whenever you went to your very first show, it was probably pretty special. Like, I was probably the same age as him, 5 or 6 years old in 1998, 1997, whatever year it was that I went to this wrestling event, the WWE show, that was my first event. And I can already tell you, like, obviously I hit my peak wrestling fandom when I was around 10 years old in the fourth grade, 10, 11 years old. That's whenever I was, you know, at my absolute wrestling peak as a child. And just from where he is at 6 years old, I could already tell you that he's a way bigger fan at 6 years old than I was at 6 years old. So we'll see kind of how it, you know, plays out over the next few years. But hopefully by the time, you know, he turns 10 and 11, he's an even bigger fan than I was when I was 10 or 11. And that's something that I really don't take for granted, because I know there's a lot of people out there that try to get their kids to have similar interests and they damn near try to force it on them. I really didn't have to do that at all. Like, he absolutely loved wrestling. In fact, I have to tell him to take it down a couple notches sometimes, because that's all he wants to talk about. And I know it starts to, like, annoy his mom. Like, when we're on a road trip and he, for, you know, 2 hours straight is just asking me questions and just saying, like, hey, remember this, remember that from the night before whenever we were at SmackDown. So there are times where we have to tell him, like, hey, you know, let's talk about something else for a little bit. But yeah, it's a pretty fun experience. Obviously, last week at SmackDown was phenomenal. I enjoyed it. But yeah, I just wanted to kind of give the loyal listeners, those of you who knew what was going on and why I was gone last week, I wanted to kind of let you guys know how it played out. It was a success. It was a fun trip to Dallas. We went to the Wax Museum as well, which, if you were in the Dallas area, you have to knock that out. Just, you know, a great tourist attraction. But anyways, here we are, 8 minutes and 45 seconds into the show. So you can, you know, comment under the post or whatever. Real wrestling talk. The SmackDown review actually starts at 8:45 or whatever, because, you know, the pre-show banter kind of, I like to touch base with you guys. I don't want to just come in immediately, hit start, and bam, okay, here's the first segment of SmackDown. I like to have a little chit-chat with you guys, especially if there's a story to be told about something that happened, you know, from the week that went on the last time that we talked. So thank you guys so much for tuning in here to this episode of the SmackDown review. I am looking forward to breaking this one down. I think this episode of SmackDown was probably a little bit better than last week, just being completely honest. Obviously, I would have liked for a couple of the people that were there tonight to be there last week. But if I would have went to tonight's episode, I wouldn't have gotten a chance to see Roman Reigns, Cody Rhodes, Seth Rollins. So you kind of, you pick and choose your battles. Great shows, both of them. But as far as this one goes, I was actually excited almost immediately out of the gate because The Rock comes out. He opens the show with a new theme song, the altered, slowdown Hollywood rock version of his theme song. And that pretty much immediately told me, okay, they're listening. Like, the WWE is really taking into what the fans are suggesting online. Maybe it was always the plan. I feel like it was, or if it was, they probably would have done it a couple weeks ago. So the fact that they're doing it now makes me think maybe they caught wind that it was a popular discussion amongst the IWC, right? The Internet Wrestling Community, or just, you know, maybe various different podcasts that they might just have somebody listen to gauge fan reaction or something like that. Who knows how they actually do that? But nonetheless, whenever I saw that The Rock's theme song was back, I thought that was it. I thought, okay, that was a nice little touch that they're going to give us. I didn't expect him to go full on Hollywood rock where, you know, back then he would have a guitar, you know, and he would actually perform the music and sing the songs. This time he was, you know, he was aided by the help of others, and we'll kind of get into that because he references how he usually decimates each city that he goes to. But this one is different because Memphis is where he actually began his pro wrestling career. He even calls it home when he says, finally, The Rock has come home, obviously, usually says the city. But with some help of some local musical talent, he offers to sing them a little song, specifically a blues song. And the things that were referenced in this song, because it was a pretty good one. I mean, it was long. I'm not going to sing it. I'm not going to recite it. But I will, you know, mention some highlights, some of the talking points that he was getting to. He mentioned Seth's back, his own fanny pack, meaning, you know, that picture, that viral picture that we've seen of The Rock from like the early 90s where he has that fanny pack and the black sweater. That's the picture he was talking about. And he also mentions Cody's mom. He says that Cody wasn't planned and he was a mistake. Becky being more popular than Seth, Ja Morant's history with guns, and a lot more. And after the song, he addressed what happened last week when he was slapped in the face by Cody Rhodes. And then he calls out Cody for what he did afterwards, going on Raw and basically just crying whenever he was explaining that he wants to hand the championship to his mother since he can no longer hand it to his father. It's an emotional moment. I'm sure it was very touching for some fans that maybe have been following this that relate to Cody Rhodes in that specific aspect. But that's pretty much what the Rock was clowning him for, was crying whenever he said that he wants to hand the belt to his mom after he beats Roman Reigns at WrestleMania 40. In which case, The Rock immediately turns his attention to Cody's mother. He looks in the camera and starts talking directly to her, telling her what he's going to do to Cody at WrestleMania whenever it's Bloodline rules. He breaks out a custom Rock weight belt, which is very similar to what Cody wears every single week or every single match, I should say. But he goes on in detail about going up to her sitting in the front row at WrestleMania after seeing Cody lose, and he starts whispering something in his ear. It was a very cringy visual, just picturing what The Rock was talking about. But it was a decent little opening segment here. The Rock was absolutely on point. It's just this version that we're getting of him. I can't say it enough. Soak this up. Like, soak these moments up that we're getting The Rock actually be featured weekly on wrestling, because just think how long we go in between this. Like, when The Rock gets going shooting movies and things like that, and he's in his grind, especially, you know, the, what is it now, the UFL, the United Football League? I don't know what, the, you know, previously the XFL. Whenever The Rock gets going in that type of stuff, you know, he might end up being too busy to make these weekly appearances. So, yes, we're going to have it leading up to WrestleMania. But just don't take it for granted, because, man, this really doesn't happen too often. And The Rock being on our television screen is something that was dearly missed for a very long time. And I know that we're in a new era. We want to push new stars, all that. The Rock is entrenched in a storyline with some of the biggest current stars in WWE right now. And you can't tell me that it's not aiding them and that it's not benefiting them, you know, with ratings and just getting over with fans, specifically Cody Rhodes. Like, the fact that he's going bar for bar with The Rock, like, that's very, very impressive. And also a little bit of a side note. This is something I forgot to mention, obviously. We're finished with that first segment. So before I get into the second segment here on SmackDown, I wanted to give a quick shout out, because at SmackDown last week when I was there in Dallas, one of my good friends here, Tino Valentino, who's a professional wrestler, an independent professional wrestler, travels all around the state of Texas and even other states as well. I mean, I've seen this guy go to Kansas, Cleveland, Ohio, many, many other places. So this is someone that, you know, he's making the rounds, and he was actually on SmackDown last week as one of the security guards. You know how Cody and Seth, The Rock, everybody, Roman Reigns, everyone had their own group of like security who was wearing the black WWE shirts. Well, one of the guys that was there front and center was one of my really good friends. I played flag football with him for years. And obviously the one time that I got into a wrestling ring and did one day of training was with Tino Valentino, who is, you know, on his way to being, you know, a phenomenal, well-known name in this industry. I truly believe that. And they showed him so much. Like, he got a lot of airtime. You probably saw his face and you just had no idea who it was, because you see these local enhancement talents every single week whenever they do these types of things, when it, like with security and things like that, or like a squash match. But seeing one of your own friends get this type of airtime, it definitely, you know, it's pretty cool nonetheless. So I did want to give a shout out to Tino Valentino for sharing a main event segment with The Rock on national television. But anyways, continuing on here, let's get into one of the tag team matches that went on tonight. There is a tag team, you can call it a tournament, right? Because this one in particular was a tag team championship qualifying match for the six-pack ladder match at WrestleMania. So what they're doing here is, you know, the winners advance to the finals of bracket one. Like, the winner of this match advances to the finals, and then the winner of the match at the end of the show tonight, that is bracket one. And those two teams that win, they make up the finals of bracket one. And bracket two is going on over a Monday Night Raw. But the winners of each bracket will join the Judgment Day in that six-pack ladder match at WrestleMania, which is going to be phenomenal. I could already tell you, ladder matches, WrestleMania, it's always a phenomenal combination. But let's see here. This match in particular, Legado del Fantasma versus LWO. And the only really, it was a really great match, I will say. Like, go back and watch this one. There's too many spots to sit here and point it out. But if I was going to give you one spot that I thought was phenomenal, was the standing Spanish fly from Cruz del Toro that he hit on Humberto Carrillo. Phenomenal move, just phenomenal spot in the match. And obviously, just I was really impressed by both teams in this match. And I can't really say that I've been impressed with Cruz del Toro and Joaquin Wilde. Like, seeing them wrestle, it's never really moved the needle for me. I've never really been interested one way or the other. But watching them tonight, I do feel like it was a little bit different. Like, I was like, oh, these guys are really on their A game tonight. Or maybe this just this matchup in particular, right? Like, these two teams are starting to build that chemistry where they can just put together a really good match at the drop of a hat. And that's really what you like to see. The more chemistry, the more work that they get together during live events and every week on SmackDown, they're obviously only going to get better at their craft. But obviously, like I mentioned, Legado del Fantasma gets the win. Legado del Fantasma gets the win. And they advance to the finals. Great match here. Up next, Caleb Braxton introduces LA Knight for a quote-unquote interview. But there really was no interview here, because LA Knight just grabs the microphone and he asks if he can quote-unquote cook. And that's exactly what he does. Directed at AJ Styles, obviously. Just calls him out for not showing up tonight. He pretty much just looks around. Is AJ Styles here? Okay, cool. He's not here. He pretty much calls him out right there. And then he says he will fly to Australia to cheat me out of the Elimination Chamber, but he won't even show up here to Memphis. That just tells you how big of a coward he is. And then, obviously, he challenges AJ Styles to a match at WrestleMania, and then AJ actually sneaks up. He was there the whole time. I'm sure none of you expected that, right? He sneaks up behind LA Knight, hits him with the chair. Boom. Challenge accepted. We get AJ Styles. We get LA Knight one-on-one at WrestleMania. And when you just look at the grudge matches, like, that's the thing that I gave a shout-out, major shout-out to WrestleMania 20, because I will say, this is 20 years since WrestleMania 20, and you guys already know how I feel about that specific WrestleMania. But the singles matches that were on that card that had nothing to do with the championship, we're talking about Goldberg versus Brock Lesnar. The match was underwhelming, but the matchup itself was actually pretty impressive. And then obviously Kane versus Undertaker, like, that match itself was just great. Like, just the buildup of Undertaker making the return to the dead man after he was buried alive at Survivor Series in the American Airlines Center, where I was just at last Friday. But also matches like, wasn't it Mick Foley tagging with The Rock going up against Evolution? There was, I know there wasn't a singles grudge match, but that was still just a pure grudge match. And I'm sure there's others that I'm just forgetting here off the top of my head. But hey, if you have any type of itch to go, you know, just watch a previous WrestleMania, I will always tell you to go watch WrestleMania 20 from Madison Square Garden. But anyways, let's continue on here in the show. LA Knight finds, or I'm sorry, Logan Paul finds Nick Aldis backstage and asks what the repercussions are going to be for Randy Orton's actions last week whenever he RKO'd KSI and ruined Logan Paul's major, you know, announcement, the sponsorship announcement, which I didn't really give my thoughts on that. I mean, it is what it is. People are already trying to reference big moments in the past, right? Like, what if Undertaker Street got broken on a Prime bottle or things like that? I don't think it hurts UFC. I just think that because we're used to a plain canvas, we're used to nothing being on the mat, that it would kind of throw off previous events. But I think that going forward, we're so used. I mean, look at the barricades, right? Like, they sometimes have sponsorships. Like, you'll be watching a random match and they'll have a Slim Jim logo on the LED boards that are just along the barricades and the posts. I've always thought that they need to tone it down a little bit with the LED boards and go back a little bit more old school. But that's just my personal opinion. Some people might not agree. And I just think that, you know, I mean, it's only on pay-per-views, so it's not like it's going to be every single week. But, you know, I understand the people that don't want it because, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But if you're worried about this, you know, ruining some big-time moments in the future, I really don't think that it will. I mean, WCW had these in the late 90s. I know that people look at that and say, well, is WWE still in business or WCW still in business? The sponsorship logos on the ring have nothing to do with why WCW went out of business. So that's, if anything, that was something they were doing right and they were ahead of the game, because that's just, you know, obviously UFC took full advantage of that. And now we finally see WWE doing the same thing. I just think that they're going to be very, very particular for which logos they put in the middle of the ring. And I, you know, obviously look forward to seeing what logos get put in the middle of a WWE ring going forward. I mean, that's the ultimate goal, right? If you have a business, I want my freaking logo in the middle of the ring for a WrestleMania, right? Like, football function, I know that's pipe dreams. But that's like, for anybody that has a small business, that should be your goal. Like, imagine having the Plum Crazy barbecue logo there in the middle of the ring for Survivor Series. You know, that's obviously our buddy Howard Poole, another patron of the show, another contributor of the football function, has a phenomenal barbecue business. And if you don't already follow that page on Facebook, even if you live nowhere near Pennsylvania and you cannot get access to Plum Crazy Barbecue, I highly recommend following his social media, because, oh my good Lord, like, it's eye food, you know, it's eye candy for you. And, you know, if you just like seeing that type of thing on social media, you know, you follow pages that always tweet recipes and they tweet videos of them making food and desserts and things like that. This is right up that alley. So shout out to Howard Poole and obviously Plum Crazy Barbecue, because they got some very good stuff going on over there. Let's move on here. Kayla Braxton scares the piss out of Paul Heyman whenever she kind of sneaks up on him accidentally as they're walking backstage in the arena. And she just simply asks for an answer to Jey Uso's WrestleMania challenge to Jimmy. And Jimmy passionately answers his challenge and says, yes, like, I'm ready for this. Like, obviously, this is another one. I mentioned the Spanish Fly. Go back and check out that spot. This is another one that if you didn't see, it's worth seeing, because you could just see in Jimmy Uso's eyes how much this match is going to mean to him. So I very much so, you know, I'm hoping this one opens the show. Like, night one, match one, let's get this bad boy going. Although it's worthy of being higher up on the card because everything that's going on here. And that just brings me back to it, man. You know, you got AJ Styles versus LA Knight, non-title, just a grudge match. That's exactly what this is right here with Jimmy and Jey Uso. So WrestleMania 40 is certainly going to be one that's extremely memorable going forward. But continuing on here in the show, we get Randy Orton versus Grayson Waller with Austin Theory at ringside. And Logan Paul, who was demanding an apology from Randy Orton, or pretty much, you know, he was demanding repercussions. He wanted Nick Aldis to find some repercussions. But, you know, Logan Paul takes a shot at Nick right there too and says, hey, you can't even find me a WrestleMania opponent. Of course you can't, you know, punish Randy Orton for doing something as stupid and chaotic as he did last week. So whatever. And then Nick just pretty much says, hey, why don't you try to get him face to face? Why don't you try to get Randy Orton's apology? So, you know, we think maybe he's actually going to try doing this. Logan Paul comes out and just watches from ringside, which he's always, you know, pretty good. Whenever he's a guest on commentary, Logan Paul is just very entertaining. But I also wanted to give a shout out to Corey Graves. because at first, whenever he was moved to play-by-play from color commentary, I thought it was like trying to put a square peg in a round hole. Like, I thought that this is someone that is extremely good at color commentary. Why would you take him out of that spot? But then I started thinking, right, if Pat McAfee's back, that's an elite color commentator. Wade Barrett's doing a fine job. I feel like with, you know, them striking out with someone like Jimmy Smith, them not really being sold on who was the more recent one? Kevin Patrick. So you look at the disappointing tenures that they had and how quickly they were replaced. You think that maybe WWE is starting to think, okay, maybe it's easier to fill the hole of a color commentator than a play-by-play. And Corey Graves has been sitting beside Michael Cole for like, what, damn near a decade? I know not exactly that long. JBL was there for, you know, damn near 10 years ago. But Corey Graves has been there for a while. He's very polished on color commentary. And maybe they just saw like, hey, let's give this guy a whack. Like, let's let him take a swing. And I think that I'm starting to finally get used to it. And I think he's starting to do a better job. I really noticed it in this match that he's just really got a little bit of Michael Cole in him. Like, you could tell that that's whose wing he was under. And I think that the more and more that we see Corey Graves as a play-by-play guy, that he could be the next one up. Like, he could be the one that passes the torch or that gets the torch from Michael Cole. Because think about it. How long was Jim Ross the play-by-play for Monday Night Raw while Michael Cole was just playing second fiddle as the play-by-play for SmackDown? For quite a long time. And then eventually Michael Cole ends up getting that, you know, that push. He ends up getting promoted. That's essentially what it is. And you think that whenever Michael Cole eventually, it's not going to happen anytime soon, he's still got a lot of years left, but you think that as soon as he's ready to maybe move to a different stage, maybe not be the guy being the voice of WWE, or maybe not be as reliable, because remember, it's pretty much like it's documented that he's, you can count on one hand how many shows Michael Cole has missed in his entire WWE career. And he's been here for a really, really long time. So if he ever wants to just take a lighter workload or something like that, I don't really know. But I just think that Corey Graves is someone that they've already got on the right path of development as someone who could possibly carry the torch and be that next guy. And it really didn't click. It really didn't sink in to me like that until this match whenever I was watching. So that's just, you know, you always remember moments like this. Even though it's just, you know, a meaningless Randy Orton versus Grayson Waller match, I got a lot more from it. But back to the actual match. Randy Orton hits both Waller and Theory with Vintage Orton, then RKO's Waller to get the win while looking directly at Logan Paul while the ref is making the 1-2-3. And then comes Austin Theory with a little cheap shot after the match, attempting to set Orton up for Logan to get a knockout punch. But before he can, Kevin Owens' music hits and he comes to the rescue, but nearly catches an accidental RKO from Randy Orton. Randy just, you know, obviously thought it was somebody else he got snuck up on. That was a little bit of a teaser there. Luckily, that was avoided, but then Nick Aldis comes out and tells Logan Paul that, hey, I took your advice, and I have determined your opponents for WrestleMania, and it's going to be a triple threat between Kevin Owens and Randy Orton. So a nice little bow on that, you know, that situation, that encounter that we got earlier in the night. A nice little bow on what could be between Randy Orton and Kevin Owens, because you know that they have a mutual respect for each other, but That slight almost RKO kind of was like, oh, hold on, what the hell's going on here? And obviously it was a mistake, but still you definitely are going to remember that. And I think we're going to, you know, probably hear about it next week. Probably going to see Kevin Owens and Randy Orton eventually have to come to fisticuffs. Once that happens, you know that the storyline's going to be just off and running. But you think about what we're going to get for that U.S. Championship match, Kevin Owens, Randy Orton, and Logan Paul. That has money written all over it, and I really think that it could be one of the show stealers of the entire pay-per-view. Up next, Santos Escobar versus Dragon Lee. Santos sneaks out with the win. The Legado del Fantasma try to jump Dragon Lee after the match until Carlito comes out, but the numbers prevail for Legado del Fantasma until Rey Mysterio comes out to get a piece of Santos and then tells him he's going to smack that little arrogant smirk off of his face next week whenever they face off in a one-on-one match. I thought he was going to challenge him to WrestleMania. Like, he had all the buildup of what Rey Mysterio would say. Like, he had the same tone when he challenged Dominic last year. And this just seemed like he was on the way to challenging him to WrestleMania. But luckily, it was just for SmackDown next week. Up next, we get a tag team championship qualifying match. for the six-pack ladder match at WrestleMania. This one is Pretty Deadly versus New Catch Republic. And I think that the right team won here. Dunn and Bate get a well-deserved win. And they're going to be showcased at least next week against Legado del Fantasma in a one-on-one match. And the winner of that specific tag team match is going to advance to that six-pack ladder match. And we'll just wait for the winner of Bracket 2 to figure out who's going to fill out the rest of the six competitors. But that takes us to the main event here, which is Bayley versus Dakota Kai with Damage Control. And the match ends in a disqualification after Damage Control gets in the ring and tries to take her out. Take Bayley out, that is. Naomi ends up coming out trying to be hero. And that proved to not be enough. And they still get to have their way and do some damage, no pun intended, to the 2024 Royal Rumble winner in Bayley. And this is just perfectly being set up. You like the, you know, the dominance that comes from Damage Control. Like, yeah, somebody's going to come out and try to save you. It's not going to be enough. This is usually whenever we can get ran out of the ring. Nah, think again. We're going to take out Naomi. The crowd was chanting EST. They wanted Bianca to come out. Not really sure if that would have made a whole lot of sense given Bianca and Naomi's little interaction they had backstage where Bianca was pretty much trying to tell her not to help Bayley. But the over the moonsault, is like their group move that they do, that Io Sky does the back moonsault off of the top rope onto Bayley. That was phenomenal work. They stand over her to give you that visual as the show goes off the air. And, you know, this is one of the more important things that's going on in all of WWE right now. Like, just think about it. On a show that had The Rock, this is what closed. So that tells you how Triple H and how, you know, just everybody involved views this storyline and views these characters involved in Damage Control with that video package or that little promo before the match where they said to everybody backstage, we run this show. I think that they're trying to cement themselves as the dominant faction in WWE. And if Bayley can't win, if she doesn't end up beating Io Sky, then maybe they're going to have some stake in that. And it might actually have some legs because they're going to have a lot more championships than not. And I still think that we need a mid-card women's championship. Is that the new flag that we got to wave here to get a mid-card women's championship? We will trade straight up for the women's tag team championships. But either way, that's just my personal opinion. Definitely let me know if you guys agree with that. If you think that a women's mid-card championship would be better than having the tag team belts, because I'm curious what you think. But thank you guys so much for listening. I am going to end this show, get it sent to Matt so you guys can listen to it, get it out in the internet, in the interwaves. And we could just continue talking wrestling. This is the best time of the year, and I try to soak it up. I try to enjoy it as much as I possibly can. Hopefully you guys are doing the same. Hopefully you will come back next week to hear the SmackDown review, as I'm not really sure where it's coming from. We'll figure that out. They're definitely on their way to Philadelphia, though, for WrestleMania 40. But thank you guys so much for listening. Have a damn good rest of your weekend. Walk passionately in the direction of your dreams, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEPodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to Patreon.com/WWE Podcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.